In the year 1870, Mark Twain wrote a short story. It's called A Medieval Romance. And I'm going to tell you the basic idea of the story, and then I'm going to read you the very end. The basic idea of the story is that there was a woman who was born to a royal father, but he only got to inherit if he had a son. So he took the simple expedient of getting rid of everybody who knew that his wife had given birth to a daughter, and he presented her to the world as a son. And she grew up, and she took the throne of the duke, the ducal throne. The only problem is that if a woman sits on the ducal throne, she's condemned immediately to death. So it's important that she never let anyone know she's a woman or she'll die. In the course of growing up, she becomes friendly with another woman who doesn't know that she's a woman, thinks she's a man. The name that she's taken for herself is Conrad. This woman falls in love with Conrad, not knowing she's a woman. And then, one day, the friend becomes pregnant and is about to give birth. And because it's out of wedlock, they hold a trial. And they say to her, "Who is the father of this child?" And she points at Conrad and says, "You." Now I'll read you the end of the story. An appalling conviction of his helpless, hopeless peril struck a chill through Conrad's heart like the chill of death itself. What power on earth could save him? To disprove the charge, he must reveal that he's a woman. And for an uncrowned woman to sit in the ducal chair was death. At one and the same moment, he and his grim old father swooned and fell to the ground. Now here's the last paragraph of the story. The remainder of this thrilling and eventful story will not be found in this or any other publication, either now or at any time in the future. The truth is, I have gotten my hero or heroine into such a particularly close place that I do not see how I am ever going to get him or her out of it again. And therefore, I will wash my hands of the whole business and leave that person to get out of it the best way that offers, or else stay there. I thought it was going to be easy enough to straighten out that little difficulty, but it looks different now. And that's the end of the story. Now remember, we're not dealing with some two-bit author here. This is Mark Twain. This is one of the greatest authors in the history of American literature. In fact, Hemingway said that all of American literature came out of Twain's masterpiece, Huckleberry Finn. And yet, he breaks the contract between reader and author, which is, whatever happens in the story, at the end, you're going to tell us the end. That's why it's called the end. It's one of the things that makes life different from literature. When you're reading a book, you can always peek ahead to the end. You can see how many pages are left. And yet Twain says, "I can't straighten out the end, so I leave it to you." I bring this up because, believe it or not, Jacob does the same thing. Yaakov comes before his children, and he says explicitly in the Torah, "I am now going to tell you what will happen ba'acharit hayamim." Acharit hayamim means at the end of days. In other words, Jacob is going to tell all of the children of Israel about the coming of the Messiah and the end time. And they gather around, and they're ready to hear about how and when human history is going to end. And then he doesn't tell them. Then he gives them all their blessings, and he dies. And we are left, the same as Twain leaves us, with the promise of an ending that never comes. Now, as you might notice, as you might suspect, rather, although traditional biblical commentators don't say anything about Twain's story, they have a lot to say about Jacob's. And the most quoted comment is, of course, Rashi's, who follows the rabbis and says, this is what happened. Jacob was about to reveal what happens at the end of time when the Shekhinah, when God's presence, fled from him and he could no longer say it. In other words, for one reason or another, God didn't want Jacob to say what happens at the end. Didn't want Jacob to finish the story. And so God took away the koach nivuah, the power of prophecy, from Jacob. And he either no longer knew or could no longer say. And so instead, he blessed his children and then he passed away. Now the interesting question, of course, is why did God do that? Why didn't God let Jacob say what he intended? And here, I'll give you two answers which are, in a sense, related to one another, and both give us a sense of the same idea. One is that many commentators offer that the end of time and the coming of the Messiah, once God promises a certain moment, has to happen at that moment. And in Jewish tradition, the coming of the Messiah shouldn't only be in God's hands, it should also be in ours. How we behave, how we misbehave, has something to do with when the Messiah comes, so God didn't want a specific time predicted, because then our conduct has nothing to do with it. But in a sort of different twist, and I think more powerful twist on that idea, the Kotzke Rebbe said this is why God would not allow Jacob to reveal the end. Because once you know the ending, you no longer strive, you no longer fight, you no longer struggle in the journey. You just wait. If you know it's going to happen at such and such a time, so you say, well, it doesn't really matter what we do, well, just wait till that happens. It eliminates the essence of life, which is not the arrival at the ending. It's the story. And it is the story, as opposed to the ending, that is the stuff of the world. That's why the Talmud says human beings are not allowed to know Yom Moto, the day of their death. And that is always hidden from us. Why is it always hidden from us? Because actually the day of your death is not the content of your life. It's the living of your life that's the content of your life. It may be in some way that the purpose of all of human history is to arrive at the Messianic age, but that is actually not the purpose of our lives. The purpose of our lives is to live them. V'chai bahem. Our tradition says about the mitzvot, you are supposed to live them, not do them mechanically to arrive at a certain end, because we don't know the end. And that's what makes a story different from life. The author can make up the end and you close the book and you're done. But we don't know. We can't be sure. And that's why what Jacob gave to his children instead of the end was a blessing. Were the tools to live. The ways in which they could carry out their own destinies, even though they never knew precisely what those destinies would be or where they would end. And why Jacob ought not to have told them about messianic times. Because, as the Torah explicitly says, the nistarot, the secrets, belong only to God. The answers are not ours. It is the saying attributed to the Vilna Gaon that if God came out of the heaven and said, in one hand are all the questions, and in the other hand are all the answers, which do you want? The Vilna Gaon said, I would take all the questions. We would, most of us, choose the answers. But that's not because we're wiser than the Vilna Gaon, but because we are less wise. It is, after all, the questions that make life intriguing, frustrating, fascinating, and worthwhile. It is the uncertainty. It is the struggle. How many times have you heard someone who has struggled to attain a high position say, the most fulfilling, the happiest, the best years of my life were when I was struggling? In other words, when everything was filled with meaning, when the story wasn't over yet. And what happens, of course, is if that person is alive and soulful and in tune with themselves and with the world, they create new struggles for themselves. No matter what position they attain. Not only because the world is full of a multitude of worthwhile and difficult things, but because that's what human beings need. They don't need to arrive at the end. They need to fight to get there. And you can imagine Jacob's children gathering around the bed, waiting to hear Acharit HaYamim. And all they get is a blessing. But now think about Jacob. What happened when Jacob was young? He stole the birthright, the blessing, from his brother. And I suspect that when he got that blessing, he thought, now I'm set. I got the blessing. From here on in, it's a cakewalk. But then, he had to flee his home. He had to work for Laban. He was tricked in his wives, marrying first Leah and then Rachel. He struggled with the angel at Yabok. He saw the anguish of having his child Joseph taken from him, and now finally he ends up in Egypt, surrounded by his children and grandchildren, and he must realize as he blesses his children, you may think this is the end, but this is just the beginning. Nobody gets to know the journey. And think about it. Had Jacob known what his journey would be, what would he have done? He wouldn't have worried about Esau. He would not have had to struggle with the angel. He never would have married Leah and Rachel because he would have said to Laban, I know you're going to substitute Leah for Rachel. Don't do it because I'm not interested in marrying Leah, and all the tribes of Israel never would have been born. Foreknowledge is destructive to human beings. Because if we know too much, we try too little. And so Jacob stood before his children, and he wanted to tell them the end because, of course, every parent wants to solve all their children's problems. But God, who has a lot of parenting experience, knew better than Jacob. You struggled, Jacob, and it made you better. You are not allowed to take the struggle away from your children because it will make them better as well. And so he blesses them. And as we see, the children of Israel have been struggling ever since. But it has made us better. And it is the lesson of all of our lives that we are not about the end, but about the means to get there. It was put beautifully and eloquently by the poet Tennyson in his poem Ulysses. When Ulysses arrives at home, and it seems as if it's the end, but he's ready to go on another journey. And as Tennyson puts it, Ulysses says, though much is taken, much abides. And though we are not now that strength which in old days moved heaven and earth, that which we are, one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. That's the legacy that Jacob left his children. Not what would happen in the end, but that they should strive to seek, to find, and not to yield. And that is, after all, the greatest blessing. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.